This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, episode 105, was recorded on May 18th, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. I'll tell you how to claim a free copy of their new guide to the best investing books ever written at the end of this episode. Joining me today is Juliet DeClercq, founder of JDI Research. Juliet, there are two schools of thought at the moment. The deflationists like Lacey Hunt and Stan Druckenmiller are looking for depression, and the hyperinflationists like Paul Tudor Jones have a different view. Where do you stand on this inflation versus deflation issue?
Hi, Eric. So that's a great question. I normally don't read much from those well-respected gurus because I try to keep JDI research thinking process original and independent using a framework that's proven reliable for years and which is as far away from any dogmatism as possible. But this time, I've had no choice. I've been summoned by my clients to read everything from those thinking minds and play devil advocates. Everyone wants to know why this person with such historical success may not be right this time. So I'll summarize my thinking for you because I've had a lot of time to think about this. Firstly, I think that looking at past trends and correlations to call today's trends will be counterproductive. Dogmatism is something I constantly warn JDI clients against because policymakers learn from each crisis, which means that there's very little of that will be repeated. The great virus crisis, let's call it that this way, is in no way comparable to the global financial crisis or the Great Depression or the tech bubble. And that's the reasons. Firstly, I think the answer to the great financial crisis was mostly monetary. The reason was the stigma about bailing out banks. And as a result, politicians had to quickly resort to austerity, which made monetary policy important. Why? Well, simply because monetary policy aims at stimulating demand in the end, but privately and everywhere in the world, except for the US corporate, obviously, the GFC marked the beginning of a painful deleveraging process with consumers really focused on tidying up their balance sheet after the psychological shock that housing prices were not going to go up forever or in a straight line. The issue, if the private sector is deleveraging, is that monetary policy relies on public spending to be effective. If you've got low rates and everyone's focused on increasing their savings, you easily hit the monetary trap and the deflationary vicious cycle will lead to depression indeed. But this is absolutely not the case this time, with the paradigm shift away from pure monetary policy to fiscal / monetary cooperation. Just yesterday, again, in the 60 Minute interview, Powell reiterated that we need to see the enhanced unemployment insurance, which runs out at the end of July, be extended, and generally is really counting on even greater fiscal stimulus. This seems to be in the pipeline, with Congress having approved the $3 trillion economy assistance package yesterday. Trump's already sort of announced that the package in its current form would not be supported by a Republican-led Senate. But can Republicans really afford to cut a much-needed fiscal stimulus short in times of unprecedented hardship, not triggered by asset bubbles? In my opinion, Powell is very clear in his head that his role is to facilitate the Treasury issuance, that is, let public liquidity flow. That means basically that low nominal rates only work to support public spending, with monetary policy on its own not able to support the recovery, because as he says, the Fed lends but cannot spend. So that's really my answer to those who believe that the Fed has run out of ammunition, unless it gives in to market pressure and look into the abyss of negative rates. It's not true as long as fiscal authorities play ball. If fiscal authorities play ball, we can see real yields drop much further on an economic reopening, with inflation breakevens normalizing. And this means that the current crisis need not result in a deflationary trap. This time, the Fed did not stop at providing liquidity to the public sector. And that's really the second bit of my answer. It's also directly lending to the private sector, thus collapsing corporate spreads. As a result, we've seen M2 growth explode, actually in line with an unprecedented economic sudden stop, which is something we have not seen in any of the past recessions. This means that the liquidity is reaching out to the corporate world. And even if it's just to plug cash flow holes, it still means that any solvent business will stay liquid until it makes it out of ICU. Of course, some would retort that the grants are mostly directed to consumers, with businesses getting credit lines and loans that eventually will need to be repaid, and that will weigh on CapEx, undoubtedly. But also, they will retort that the huge debt issuance precludes using the fiscal lever in the future, and that the global debt overhang will lead to depression. I disagree on this for two reasons. Firstly, with real yields below real growth, your debt ratio will start coming down again after the initial jump higher. And there is even a case to make that all you need to do is issue more until you get inflation. In other words, there is a case to make that larger issuance will eventually get a country back to solvency. As long as the CB can keep real yields depressed, that is. And to convince yourself about this, just look at the Japan debt dynamic pre and post global financial crisis. For me, the main mistake that Japan has done after going to YCC in the summer of 2017, I believe, is that at the same time, fiscal authorities went ahead with higher VAT, and that's the reason why you basically didn't manage to get anything out of the policy. Lastly, I don't actually see these war bonds as ever being repaid. There are and will continue to be quasi-monetized. Ideally, you would finance via perpetuals, but you can also replicate perpetuals by issuing long-term debt, which the Fed would be expected to roll indefinitely.
Juliet, naturally, this leads to the question of a return to secular inflation. Are you basically saying that MMT is what makes the difference between depression and reflation?
So the difference between MMT and monetization is that you don't lose the link with an independent central bank with the mandate to maximize employment in a certain inflation framework. In other words, assume that we find a vaccine tomorrow and the Fed's liquidity proves way too abundant, the Fed would certainly use the opportunity to finally overachieve on its inflation target, but it would then have to get onto liquidity withdrawal, which is basically your safeguard against hyperinflation. Fiscal authorities would not be able to do this, or they potentially wouldn't even be willing to withdraw the excess liquidity. And that could mean to hyperinflation. But this is not what's going on right now. MMT is not what is going on right now. So just to go back to your initial question, I think the interesting thing between those two schools of thought is that both seem to lead to a bearish risk bias. What I'm actually arguing since mid-March is that there is an in-between which actually takes us to new highs in stocks potentially next year, whilst keeping valuation levels stretched, but not necessarily overstretched. I don't think that the Fed will let Warren Buffett get the value that he's been expecting considering previous cycles. And I've actually argued that we can see a V-shaped recovery in assets, and that would be totally in line and consistent with a tentative just U-shape economic recovery.
So this is the view on the Fed, but you have been recommending long European stocks too. How can you justify that with the same framework given the recent German constitutional ruling, which may tie the ECB's hand with respect to monetary printing in the future?
So I see what everyone sees as yet another EU crisis, as actually an incentive to advance EU integration further. And in fact, I've been proven right in the past few days. I think it's not desirable to have an unelected entity, e.g. the ECB, as the main source of EU cohesion. And I will certainly not deny this. But if you listen to Merkel's pitch last Wednesday, she has paved the way for Europe to make a big leap forward following the ruling. Effectively, she said, if the ECB cannot allow for effective transfers between member states, which is the what German court is saying, then it's high time that fiscal authorities do it themselves. In other words, we might be seeing more integration. And I think the question really is that, are we headed to EU bond issuance for more solidarity? And that's like as opposed to euro bonds or corona bonds that were floated before and that are for some countries unacceptable. I think that's what Merkel is going to. I also think that it's what the von der Leyen is going towards. And this is tending also towards Macron's position. So we'll see what happens on May 27th. But my advice is to never forget that Europe only moves forward when completely cornered, and to be careful being too bearish, as the EU project is really a work in progress. So in fact, this is one of the arguments I made to recommend that clients buy the dips in risk on Thursday last week.
Juliet, in the last interview that I did with you, at that time, you said it was too early to imagine the post-great virus crisis world. Have you had enough time now to have perhaps some thoughts on that and an idea as to how this might turn out?
You know what, Eric? It's still really too early to have like belief. But what I do have is wishes. And what really I've never felt so much during this crisis is how money was worthless, not only because it risked being inflated away, but also because it cannot buy us any freedom, it cannot buy us health, and it could not even buy my kids the education they deserve. I'm a rubbish teacher, by the way. So what I realized is that we can actionate La Casa de Papel, basically print money, to plug abysmal income gaps. But does it really mean anything if the supply side is shut? Unfortunately, in the past few decades, crucial public concerns like health, education, equality, sustainability, and climate change have been sacrificed to the narrow pursuit of wealth and wealth growth, the so-called GDP. And there is simply no incentive for entities. Either you might be talking about public entities, countries, or even private entities, companies, to focus on anything else than returning money. This crisis has, in my opinion, shown that it is fundamentally failing our best interest. So the pursuit of GDP is failing our best interest. You know, many macro aggregates have been imposed to the world as part of the post-WW2 Marshall Plan. And I think it may be time to move on to acknowledging, compiling, and publishing macroeconomic aggregates that measure a country's domestic welfare rather than just the money created. And this means starting to measure GDW rather than the traditional and very narrow domestic product. Of course, you'll argue that it's irrelevant to markets. And at first sight, you'd probably be right. But what I think as well is that it could also be expanded to firms. That framework could be expanded to firms. And we could judge a firm's performance in terms of its social and climate impact. And it could then be reflected in their level of taxation or in the way their products are tariffed. This should not lead to an overall higher level of taxation. Of course, I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback here, but to a new economic model where firms' interest domestically and internationally would be in line with the public interest. And basically, a certain equity could trade at a premium or discount just because of the potential tax credit they expected to receive for increasing our welfare. In my opinion, this would be a good way to get out of failing WTO and actually return to a globalization that will suit the public's best interest. If we're really thinking about what we used to want for our children, I think we were really all focused on accumulating wealth, and that wealth was measured in financial or real assets. And we just wanted to, you know, provide as much for the future generations. I feel this is really no longer true. And I think we want to be giving more than just money.
Well, Juliet, thanks for a great interview. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast on quant and rules-based investing. Be sure to claim your free copy of their recently updated guide to the best investing books ever written at toptradersunplugged.com/macro guide. And if you haven't heard it yet, be sure to check out my full-length interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on trend following strategies, which is linked in your research roundup email. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. Also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.